I tried to go slow too, so I wouldn't raise that body.
And he's like, "Well, how long ago did she leave?" And Jennifer's like, 5 minutes. Sitting in, she's probably home by now.
I came in shorts and a t-shirt today because I was like, you know what? I'm not messing around.
I know. I was hoping to put sandals away, but need to, you know, you don't want socks.
I do want socks though, Heidi.
I know.
That's the problem.
I know.
This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KPXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
You know, yesterday I had a story about how, you know, it was the first day you were also working hard on this, the first day without federal funding for the public media across the country. Our founder, Rich McClear, saw our story and he said that we actually, the first year, did not have federal funding.
Oh, it hadn't come through yet.
Yeah, which I thought was really interesting. And so here we are, we're almost 50 years later, we're kind of in that same place again. Mm-hmm. And that's really a powerful reminder that, you know, we've always been people powered, and today we need you more than ever.
Yeah. You can support us at KAXE.org. There's also this really cool tool because there are a lot of stations, particularly in rural places, that have up to 50% of their budget or more that is through the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So there's this website, adoptastation.org, simply allows you to search like the hardest hit stations. The ones whose percentage of their budget is most taken up, and you can help support those stations as well. So I know there's lots on there from Alaska, of course, from Minnesota. We've got it. That's also another pretty cool tool for just public radio in general.
What's it called again?
Adoptastation.org.
All right, check it out. Up next, we've got local news for you.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. An estimated 350 people packed into the 4-H building at the Beltrami County Fairgrounds Tuesday night to testify before a judge in the joint administrative trial between Northern Township and the City of Bemidji. The judge allowed Bemidji Mayor George Prince and the attorney representing Northern Township, Mike Corey, to each address the sizable crowd before the hearing began. While recording of proceedings was not permitted, Mayor George Prince recapped his speech with press outside. He says because elected officials couldn't work out their disagreements, the decision over where boundaries will be set and which local government will build sewer around Lake Bemidji lies in the hands of a judge.
It's a failure, and I own an equal share of that, along with, I'd argue, every other elected official that's been involved in this. And so I'm not going to run away from that. I'm not going to pretend that isn't a real thing. We have to get beyond it. We have to abide by whatever decision we get.
Corey says enough of Northern Township's land has already been annexed into the City of Bemidji, and that becoming a city will firm its boundary and protect its tax base.
No coincidence the city is trying to annex a thin little strip of Northern Township all the way around the lake, about 6 miles or so. It's kind of a crazy annexation in that regard. And it's because that's where the tax base is.
Northern Township, with federal grants and possible state bonding dollars, plans to assess these lakeshore properties for some of the cost of the infrastructure for the $21 million project. Bemidji says it could time out installing sewer and water at least to Lake Bemidji State Park in 2026 to work in conjunction with Beltrami County's planned road construction. The city, with already established utility systems, offers a deferred connection program for new utility customers. The public can provide written comments through October 24th, and Judge Jessica Palmer-Denig will review them for several months before she makes her decision. A similar public hearing with the judge present will be hosted at the Sanford Event Center in Bemidji at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, October 8th. Members of the public and property owners impacted by the Brimson wildfire this spring can obtain free firewood and gravel permits from the Superior National Forest. The firewood permits are valid for up to 3 years for personal use within the Brimson Fire Complex area to help aid in restoration efforts. Property owners within the 28,000-acre fire zone can obtain a free gravel permit for up to 100 cubic yards of material. The Superior National Forest states that permits can be obtained through its Laurentian Ranger District office in Aurora, with more information available on its website. The permits will be available beginning Monday. The state's Ag Department recently received $11 million from the USDA to expand conservation practices on irrigated agricultural land. The funding will support a five-year project in 25 counties statewide, building upon previous grant work in 2021. The program will provide financial and technical assistance to farmers using irrigation systems, with efforts focusing on precision irrigation technologies, improved nitrogen management, irrigation water management, protecting groundwater, and expanding the adoption of conservation practices on existing farmlands. Financial assistance is expected to become available later this year. The program will be administered with 26 soil and water conservation districts, including Cass, Hubbard, Mille Lacs, and Morrison counties. The Minnesota Department of Transportation will host an open house for its planned project on Highway 33 in Cloquet. MnDOT staff will be on hand to answer questions from 5 to 7 Thursday evening at the Cloquet Armory. MnDOT began its study in 2024 and is slated to finalize its designs in 2027 for construction in 2028. Planned corridor improvements include two traffic signal replacements, new bike and pedestrian facilities, space for a future motorized trail, and new drainage and lighting infrastructure. The project is estimated to cost $9 million, and construction impacts include lane closures and local detours. Kootaska Community Action is hosting a Halloween costume drive for International Falls and Grand Rapids trick-or-treaters. Kids' costumes can be dropped off at two Grand Rapids Kootaska offices Monday through Thursday and will be distributed to low-income families early in October. A distribution event for iFalls is slated from 2:30 to 5 Thursday, October 9th at the Backus Community Center. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 7:07. Thanks for tuning in. It's Thursday morning on People Powered KAXE. Coming up, we'll have the reaction to the national shutdown yesterday, and we're also hearing from the Kentucky governor, Andy Beshear, about his cross-party appeal in a state that has always overwhelmingly voted for President Trump. Stay tuned for that story. Here's what we're looking at. It's just a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, but doesn't that sound lovely?
No. Yeah.
Increasing cloud. I mean, it would just kind of lighten it up.
Yeah.
80 to 84 today. South winds 10 to 20. Slight chance of showers and thunderstorms for tonight. Cloudy. Temperatures 57 to 58. Tomorrow, Friday, some fog. 82 to 85. And by Saturday, even a little warmer. Mid to upper 80s.
I did hear by Monday it's going to be 50 in the 50s.
You can get your turtlenecks out then, Kari.
My tights and my turtlenecks. You know what I'm wearing on Monday. We received support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Got a fun morning for you. We're going to be talking a little bit more, too, about the federal funding, about what it means in terms of public radio music. I've got questions to ask you in the 8 o'clock hour.
Okay.
We're also welcoming into our studio
a biker.
Yeah, it's a bright spot. You know, we on our bright spot stories, we highlight someone doing something good in our community. We're going to meet Connor Steffen. He recently finished, you know, just a minor 2,723-mile bike ride.
Just a minor thing.
From Seattle to Grand Rapids. So the reason he did it was to raise awareness and funds for men's mental health. We're going to talk with Connor, and if you have questions for him, you can join that conversation. You can text us at 218-326-1234.
In honor of Connor, I rode my bike today.
Good for you.
Yeah. It was a nice day to start, a nice way to start the day. Also, coming up, I just want to flag this a little bit early, that it's best wishes at 7:30, and we have no best wishes listed.
How's that? Oh, I have one in my life. My niece Anna is going to get a lot.
Okay, she's going to get a lot of love during best wishes. Yes. Okay, so if you have a birthday wish that you would like to pass along today, we can certainly do that at about 7:30. Text us 218-326-1234.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep in Louisville, Kentucky.
And I'm Leila Fadel in Washington, D.C. Across the country, hundreds of thousands of federal employees are furloughed or working without pay because of this shutdown.
Yeah, now I stopped by a couple of federal buildings while reporting here in Kentucky and found some people working as normal. But elsewhere across this country, some government offices are closed and facilities at national parks are not available.
A longer shutdown will bring more pain, as we are hearing from NPR's Greg Allen. Good morning, Greg.
Good morning, Leila.
So what kind of government services are affected by this shutdown?
Well, a lot of the most vital government services, things like Social Security payments, also Medicare and Medicaid, are supposed to be unaffected by the shutdown. However, staffing shortages are likely to lead to delays in some services as this drags on. In Boston, Jim's a federal employee who handles workers' comp claims. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to give his last name because he's not authorized to speak to the media. But like many other federal employees, he's still working and won't be paid until the shutdown's over.
I've been through it before, so I knew to set funds aside.
Air traffic controllers and active duty military personnel are also working without pay until this is all over.
Was there much of an impact yesterday, the first day of the shutdown?
Well, we had public radio reporters and producers out visiting government offices and national parks around the country. Many, but not all, national parks and monuments were open, but still lots of rangers and other staff were told to stay home. At Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado yesterday, Michelle Schroeder, who was visiting from Wisconsin, said she's worried about the impact of the park of too many tourists with too few staff.
I feel really bad if it's a free-for-all, because I think things could get out of hand really quickly. Just people being disrespectful to public lands or, you know, national park. And I worry, especially the longer this goes on.
Okay, so that's what's happening with federal workers. What about government programs that will be most affected?
Well, among the things most at risk are federal food assistance programs. Those are SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and the Program for Women, Infants, and Children, WIC. There are staffing reductions and concerns that the programs could run out of money if the shutdown doesn't end soon. In Silver Spring, Maryland yesterday, Carlos Hernandez came in to renew his benefits through SNAP, but the office was closed. He's 75, a U.S. citizen from El Salvador, and says the benefits help a lot.
Yo pienso que hay confusión.
He says, I'm retired, and what I get from the government is very little. It's not enough, and everything is so expensive. Mr. Hernandez said he's confused about why the government shut down and worries what it means for his benefits.
And Greg, you're in Florida, where people rely heavily on the government's federal flood insurance program. Are there any issues with that because of the shutdown?
Yes, definitely. The National Flood Insurance Program insures more than 4.5 million homeowners nationwide. The largest number of them, some 40%, are here in Florida. With the government shutdown, no new policies can be written. And it's something realtors are watching very closely, including Florida Association of Realtors President Tim Weishire.
In the short term, it doesn't have to mean anything. And I mean short term, literal short term, within the next day or two or three. But anything beyond that, there is a ripple effect that can create quite a bit of challenge for the marketplace.
For people looking to get a mortgage on a home in a flood risk zone, the freeze of the program means they can't get flood insurance now, and lenders require them to have flood insurance before going through the home purchase. So if the shutdown isn't resolved soon, real estate sales across the country will be put on hold or even canceled.
NPR's Greg Allen in Miami. Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
Effects of the shutdown are spreading slowly here in Kentucky. I went to the Louisville Federal Building and found employees outside yesterday having lunch on their normal workday, although they had heard of others who were sent home. Nobody knows about days ahead since President Trump has threatened to fire people, which Kentucky's Democratic Governor Andy Beshear does not like.
If he fires a bunch of people, it's not because Democrats wouldn't reach a deal, it's because the president decides and actually fires people. People aren't a negotiating tool. They are not a prop. And that's how he's treating these families.
I want to be totally real here. I realize there's an issue that Democrats have raised having to do with Obamacare subsidies. But is part of this also that your party felt that they needed to do something to show resistance to this president because they object to so very much of his agenda and his style of governing?
I think that, at least for me, the reason to stand up and push back right now has to be one that directly impacts American families. And certainly the cost of your health care is that important.
We were talking with Andy Beshear in the old governor's mansion. It's a brick house from the 1790s, now his temporary office while the state capitol is under reconstruction. Beshear's party is seeking reconstruction, which is why we came to Kentucky. The governor is talking of a run for president, having won two terms in a red state. To prepare for our meeting, our team drove to Bardstown, Kentucky, and had a drink at the Heaven Hill Bourbon Distillery.
Okay, all right, if it burns, I want you to exhale right after you swallow, and it'll make it not choke you up.
It's a little burning. Ooh, it digs in after a minute.
Uh-huh, it's got a nice finish on it.
Jennifer Gray, the bartender, says her nickname is Bourbon Barbie. This is a tourist town, and bourbon is a big attraction. The county voted big for Trump and also for the Democrat Beshear.
Hi there. How are you?
Luke Barton, who's a local bar owner, says Beshear's politics fit this area.
Yeah, I think it's because he's so moderate. I find Kentucky folk are very just libertarian.
It is a very red state that also voted for the libertarian-leaning Senator Rand Paul and for Beshear, the son of a popular governor. Like other voters here, Crystal Pratt called him by his first name.
I met Andy a couple years ago when he first was running, and fantastic guy, great attitude, great personality.
She voted for him once, and then she voted against him, feeling his pandemic restrictions were too tough.
I see he's trying to do the fast track to the White House, so.
What do you think about that?
I don't know how I feel about that just yet. I'm curious to see what else he can offer, and there's several things I don't agree with him.
She still likes him enough that she doesn't mind when he criticizes Trump, who she also likes and voted for. I told the governor what I heard in Bardstown. The most common question was, is he running for president?
Right now, my job is to speak reason into some of the chaos that we're seeing in this country, to be a common sense, common ground, get things done type of voice, because the American people want a party, any party, that will focus on their everyday needs. Next year, I've committed to be the head of the Democratic Governors Association, and we're going to win a lot of races across this country because Democratic governors govern well. And then after that, I'll sit down with my family and we'll see.
And he says he would have a record to run on.
We've seen jobs come to a lot of places that haven't had jobs in far too long. We built a first hospital in our largest African-American community in 150 years. We see success here, and that's a recognition that success isn't red or blue. A good job is just good for a family.
When you talked about jobs, I was immediately thinking of an event earlier this year. Tim Cook of Apple showed up at the White House, showed the president some glass, and he said, this is the screen for an iPhone, and we're going to be making a lot more of these in the United States, specifically at a plant in Harrodsburg, Kentucky. With that in mind, would you say that President Trump has done anything good for Kentucky?
Well, I think there any president that I have served with, I've always made the commitment to where if I disagree, I'm going to speak up. But if I agree, I'm going to say that too. Certainly the Apple announcement is going to help there. Now, I will say we're seeing the impact of tariffs, not just in the future, but hitting now. We just had a furniture company in Georgetown announce that they're going to lay off 100 employees, 100 of my families, because tariffs are making the raw materials that are ultimately used for that furniture too expensive.
Why do you think it is that Democrats have done so poorly in rural areas and rural states?
Well, I believe that the Republican Party has been very effective in demonizing Democrats based on national politics and national issues. But Democrats need to be the common sense, common ground, get results type of party, one that spends 80% of its time on concerns that impact 100% of the American population. See, I've seen that voters are willing to vote for you even if they disagree on some social issue, if they believe that you're working to create a better job for them, if you recognize that the roads they drive are so important that a new one might save them 20 minutes each way on their commute and they get 40 more minutes with their family. But the Democrats need to focus.
You gave me a number of 80% on practical everyday issues. What's the number now, do you think, for the Democratic Party?
Well, I don't think it's 80%. And what some Democrats would say, and they'd be right, is we can't abandon our convictions, and we shouldn't. I remember during my reelection, my legislature passed the nastiest piece of anti-LGBTQ legislation our state had ever seen. And I knew they did it, in part, so that they could run tens of millions of dollars of negative ads if I vetoed it. But I did veto it because it was the right thing to do. But I also explained my veto to the people of Kentucky. I said, my faith teaches me that all children are children of God, and I didn't want these kids being picked on.
I think I hear you saying you're telling people, this is my belief. I'm not asking you to change your belief, but this is my belief and I have to act on it.
It shows them respect. Whether they always vote for me or never vote for me, explaining the why shows people respect.
I want to push this a little farther. There are people on your side of the argument, Democrats or progressives, who will say and are very loudly saying now on social media, why should I appeal to someone who's a racist or who is a fascist or who thinks Donald Trump is great? That is the question that they will ask. What is your answer to that question?
Well, we have to talk to everyone if we want a better America. I remember I'm standing in an elevator, probably 2 years ago, and there's a guy who turns towards me and says, I owe you an apology. When people were protesting outside where you and your family live during the pandemic, I was there. He said, I was scared, I was angry. And a couple months ago, I got vaccinated, and I'm sorry. And I said, it's okay. We've got to recognize that our lives are complicated. What people have gone through is complicated. There's a lot of trauma out there and a lot of difficulty. And we can't lose faith that people can be better and that we as a country can be better. But to do that, we've got to encourage people to come back, to treat their neighbor as themselves, to live out that golden rule and parable of the Good Samaritan, and not lose faith in humanity.
Governor Beshear, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Andy Beshear is thinking of a run for president. Our video interview from here in Kentucky is on YouTube, the NPR app, and social media. Broadcasting today from the studios of Louisville Public Media, this is NPR News.
Morning Edition, it's here on KAXE at 7:21. I'm Heidi Holton.
I'm Kari Hedlund, and it is going to be another warm day in northern Minnesota. Highs 80 to 84 today with a slight chance for some showers and thunderstorms. We're really hoping for that. We're gunning for that. So that means it probably won't happen.
Right.
Sorry.
Some clouds, though. We'll see that.
Hey, I had a question for you. Mm-hmm. Jeff Sundin was talking earlier this morning, and was mentioning like location wise, and he was talking about Grand Rapids being in north central Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Do you consider it? I guess I that was surprising to me. Maybe I need to look at a map again.
Yeah, no, I don't really consider it that, but I know he has.
It is sort of centrally located in the northern half, you know.
Yeah, I think he's thinking of it. He's on Winnie a lot.
Yeah.
And he's on Leech some of the time. And I think he's sort of incorporating kind of the Brainerd Lakes area too.
Okay.
And so it's kind of his, in terms of his business, I think
sure.
is what he means. I don't know if you're listening, Jeff, you can send us a text.
It just was like, oh, interesting. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah.
Or I don't label it that way. But.
Well, and so interesting that this time of year, he doesn't usually see swimmers. And he's,
I know.
This week, he sees swimmers everywhere. And
oh, I know. And I swam a lot this summer, and I love swimming in the lakes up here, but I'm also done with that, Heidi.
Last time I swam was last week, but I might, depending on how the day goes, I think I'm going to go today.
That would be probably a good idea. Mm-hmm. Bring the whole body temp down.
Yeah. Yeah. It isn't as bad. Like I mean, it's not great. You know, it's not as much that I want to stay in as long, but it feels, I don't know if I could be the cold plunge person that. It's hard for me anyway to like jump off the boat. It takes mm-hmm. a little, I mean, I do it, but it just takes a little mind game for mm-hmm. me to like, I honestly need someone to shove me.
My husband.
Would you do that?
Shove you?
Yeah.
Sure. I could do that. I could play that role.
Okay.
Kyle's biggest statement is you're not going to regret it if you do it.
No, I know. I know.
And that's usually what gets me like, man, you're right. All
Have
right.
you ever regretted it? Yeah, I know. I get a lot of that too. All this week, this has been a really fun week. We got inspired last week. Malachi was my host, and mm-hmm. we talked about grocery stores. We talked with a new MinnPost reporter, originally from the Iron Range, and he had focused on small-town grocery stores in very small towns, in Grigla, in Cook. He went to three different towns, you know, independent ones, and mm-hmm. what it means for them economically, what happens if they can't stay open, what it means in terms of the federal government right now and SNAP benefits, what it means in terms of hunger and that the federal government is no longer collecting data on hunger. I mean, it's a very comprehensive conversation, and that article is available on our website as well. But it really got us in the mindset. I didn't know Malachi had worked at a grocery store.
He talked about, I didn't know that.
Yep. He talked about his small town grocery store. And of course, our very own Jennifer Barr, lots of grocery store connection there. But it opened up a lot for people. And we've been getting so many great texts and stories this week. And it just reminds me of like why we do Question of the Week.
Mm-hmm.
It just brings us together to hear these things.
For sure. And sometimes it like this one in particular is very much that capturing that nostalgia piece where mm-hmm. it reminds you of something that usually is with a fondness. And
yeah.
it's, and also like how similar some of the stories are. Kyle texted in on the other day, Tuesday, talking about the Piggly Wiggly here in Grand Rapids. And
right.
it was nearly the same story that I had from my grocery store in Aberdeen.
Yeah. Did you see? And we also heard from Mickey was the other one who was talking about Piggly Wiggly. And she sent in a photo that they used to have their mascot. If you can find her in our text thing, it's going to be in the story that we're working on for the website at KEXC.org. But I can show you that in a bit. But it was a big plastic pig.
Oh, God.
Pig
he's
head.
Kind of scary.
Yeah. I mean, look how hard that head is.
Look at those huge eyes.
I know. So weird things like that, you know, a lot
mascot
of people
for a grocery store. I mean,
yeah. A lot of people, we had Red Owl was a big deal where I was. But some of the like Schaefer's in Nisswa, kind of between Nisswa and Brainerd, still going strong. That mm-hmm. was a big one for us. And I was remembering things. I asked Jennifer and because, you know, sort of more of a values ethics question of whether she ever eats grapes in the grocery store. Because my grandmother just ate. And whatever she felt like while she was shopping. And so that was
free because you're there.
Oh, yeah. She just, and she's talking to everybody, just no hiding, you know, of eating the grapes and, or a few other things. But she hadn't, and she didn't think that was quite right. But I'll grab a couple grapes here and there and check and see if they're
okay.
I
do a little squeeze test.
Oh, I eat them.
I know. I kind of forgot about that until I heard someone talking about that earlier this week. And then I was like, oh yeah, I guess I did used to test them, but now I just do a little squeeze test.
Yeah.
Koshin's in Big Fork was my first grocery store up here.
Yeah.
When we first moved, because we lived in Marcel and I loved that grocery store.
Yeah. We heard from John in Chicago. He said yesterday that he grew up in West Duluth. Our neighborhood grocery store was Denfeld Super Value. In addition to there being several checkout lanes with both a cashier and a grocery bagger, I recall the large cardboard tubs for groceries and the rolling conveyors that delivered your purchases through the wall to another attendant who would load them into the truck.
Kessler's in Aberdeen, that was my grocery store growing up, still has it. I was back there for my high school reunion, and me and my girlfriends were like loading up on some stuff for the house we were staying at, and we were all like, no way, they still have the conveyor belt. I know that it's a staffing thing probably, but like, what a brilliant concept.
Well, I just find it so funny with the difference in, you know, how we do things ourselves. Like when I first moved to Grand Rapids, it was Ogles at the time. They were still carrying your groceries out to the car for you.
Oh, yeah.
And I had gotten so used to like bagging my own groceries and doing it myself, that was sort of off-putting for me. Like, what am I going to do? I'm going to talk to this teenager, you know? and it's just so different how life is, you know, because mm-hmm. now we don't always even see anybody. We're checking out ourselves, mm-hmm. you know? But back in the day, there's, you know, someone checking you out. There's a bagger who's putting it in the bin. And then there's someone outside to put it in your car.
Yeah. That's interesting because, you know, thinking about like that we sort of, our world is set up to be a little avoidant of people.
Yeah.
I just saw this thing the other day on the internet where it was like, this girl telling her mom, like, mom, it's just so hard to build community. And she's going outside and she's like, oh, my neighbor's out there. I got to wait until they get into their house because I don't want to go out and see my neighbor. And it's like the, you know, like, oh, it's so hard to build community, but also I want to hide by myself and not see anyone. It's like, well, you kind of can't have it both ways.
I know.
And it's hard.
It is. We heard from Laura. She just said, do you remember the original warehouse grocery stores where items were just on the shelves in open boxes? I remember this. You wrote the price of the item with a red wax pencil so the checkout person knew what each item cost. That stressed me out so much.
You had to write the price down?
Yeah.
I
only remember
how would they know if you're not lying?
Well, yeah, that's honor system. Just remember it for like the bins, kind of in the produce section of the nuts and the things like that.
Oh, yes, like the bulk items. Yes, yeah. I know those.
Yeah, I do remember, like, it wasn't in the town I grew up in, but it might have been also when I was grocery shopping with my grandma of that sort of thing. And she knew exactly what she was doing, and I was a little nervous. Oh, Carrie, so good to hear from you this morning. I forgot you come from a grocery store family. Their grocery store in Sandstone still has people who carry groceries out to your car.
Oh, cute. Morning, Carrie. Love that. If you have a grocery store story or tale or memory, we'd love to hear from you. You can text us and be part of the conversation. 218-326-1234. And Carrie said it's Chris's Food Center. We have an awesome meat market too. Nice. If you're in Sandstone. I go to this wine shop in South Minneapolis where it's a very small, like, 3-employee shop, you know, where all of the wine is just in open boxes with, like, the descriptions written on a piece of cardboard. So it's like so bare bones as far as like not aesthetics, but as far as I don't know what you would say. They're like, there's no price tags. There's no nothing like that. Right. It's just, I love it.
Cub Food says Brandon Chase was that way when it first started. You had to write the price on the product. I grew up in Stillwater, Minnesota, and we had Holly's Supermarket, and Dave Hooley was one of the founders of Cub Foods. Good to know.
Thanks, Brandon. We are here on this Thursday morning, and we've got best wishes coming up. We have a story from a biker coming up next hour who has made a trek of 2,700 miles on his bicycle, not a motorcycle, a bicyclist coming in next hour. And again, you can be part of this conversation anytime by texting us, 218-326-1234.
Coming up before 8, we've got Chelsea Perkins joining us, our news director, talk about some of the latest stories on our website.
We receive support from Harmony Food Co-op in Bemidji, partnering with local farms for over 2 decades to provide fresh and local foods. Promoting sustainability through local buying, open daily from 8 to 8, or at harmonyfoods.coop, also on Facebook.
And thanks to Clocko Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, they make traditional old world styles of beer and modern classics for 7 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Saturday, noon to 8, Sunday from noon to 6, clockobrewing.com. Well, we didn't hear from anybody yet. It's time for best wishes.
We have no best wishes today on our... So it's your niece's?
Yes, she does not. She lives in Minneapolis. So
okay.
She's probably not going to hear this, and so I don't have her on the list. But
I know.
Anna Jackson, have a wonderful birthday. Somehow in the ether, it will get out there to you.
Brian Singer had a birthday yesterday, my best buds. And so shout out to Brian. Also probably not listening this morning, but that's okay.
I think in the honor of lack of birthdays, we're going to play our album of the week. How's that?
Perfect. The new one, it's from Nico Case, and it's her 8th album. It's her first since 2018's release called Hell On. And I love the thought behind this album. So since 2018's release, she's just had a lot of people close to her that have died, either unexpectedly or otherwise. And so while this album is about grief, she took it in the realm of celebration and making music with people, making the beautiful thing that is music with people. And so it's very orchestral. It's quite a production, which she fully produced it herself and recorded it with her large group of close friends and frequent collaborators. So we're going to take a listen to Little Gears off of our album of the week, Neon Gray, Midnight Green by Nico Case.
And Lisa just wrote in, her granddaughter Knox turning 13 today.
Happy birthday.
Mm-hmm. assumed it was a three-day event, as intricate as they are, as fragile as they are. But she finished it in less than an hour. I felt cheated by how easy it was. No mistakes, no missteps.
Yeah, for sure. You can read more about Neon Gray, Midnight Green, the album of the week this week by Nico Case at our website. Malachi has a write-up there, and you can read about our featured album of the week every week here on KAXE.org. We receive support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northhomes.org. And support for KAXE comes from Great Lakes Aquarium with its new exhibit, Lava de Lakes, offering a discovery into what was here before the land we call Minnesota, including sharks, jellyfish, and giant prehistoric fish. Hours and tickets at glaquarium.org. Hey, the Friends of the Brainerd Public Library are having their big fall book sale now through October 3rd at Westgate Mall, and it's from 10 to 6 each day. And today, the Itasca County Public Health is offering a flu vaccine clinic from 4 to 6 at the Itasca Resource Center in Grand Rapids for those with and without insurance. No appointments are necessary.
There's so much going on this weekend. It's a little bit crazy. There's a fall studio tour with McCrossy Arts Center on Saturday from 10 to 4. You can visit 9 different studios with 21 participating artists. Some of them kind of double up. So you can go get inspired and see how, what the process is like. Also going on is the 9th Annual Monarch Butterfly Festival is this Saturday. It's from 1 to 4 at the new Bemidji Veterans Home on Ann Street. There'll be speakers, music, and a children's butterfly parade.
And there's a great pumpkin festival, the 18th annual, on Saturday from 1 to 4 at Memorial Park in Brainerd. There's games, crafts, and food.
Iron Range Pasty Festival is Saturday at Mountain Iron Community Center, 4 to 7. There's pasties made from all local ingredients and live music, local farmer market vendors.
And comedian Rob Fairbanks, also known as the Res Reporter, is performing at the New York Mills Regional Cultural Center Saturday at 7. Tickets online or at the door.
Oktoberfest celebration in the city of Nevis on Saturday from 3 to 8. There'll be German food, music, games, and more. Visit nevischamber.com for more information.
There was just a story on the morning show about this one. The Edge Center for the Arts in Big Fork is hosting the Sketches of Minnesota Traveling Improv Comedy Tour on Saturday, starting at 5 o'clock with a social hour and meal followed by a community conversation. Members of Danger Boat Productions will create an unscripted comedy routine based on these conversations. The event is free, but you just have to pre-register at edgecenterarts.org/events.
And this Sunday, October 5th, is the Range Area Walk to End Alzheimer's. It's at Minnesota Discovery Center in Chisholm. Registration at noon, opening ceremony at 1, and the walk will follow.
Whew, it's a lot.
That's right.
If you've got a community event that you'd like to get onto KAXC, you can email psa@kaxc.org.
Coming up next, we've got our nature note from John Latimer. Then we're going to be checking in with Chelsea Perkins for our newsroom update.
On today's date, October 2nd, 2004, I wrote the following note. The asparagus looks like Christmas trees today as the foliage is green and the berries are orange-red. This is a really excellent time of year to stake out your asparagus patch. They grow in ditches and sometimes in open fields and sometimes tucked up against old homesteads, but here and there they survive. And this is an excellent time of year to look for them because they are, as I said, green with red berries, and this time of year they're going to become progressively more and more yellow, and in fact they will begin to look almost like flames on the countryside before the end of October. So check them out, and when you find them, if your memory's really good, you can probably just remember to come back there in the spring and harvest the stalks. But if your memory's more like mine, probably the best thing you could do would be to take some sort of little stakes out there and mark the area so you can find them again.
Words don't come easily to me. I notice you don't have that problem. It sounds to me you cannot stop them. I'm polite, I look you in the eye, and take the wind that never ever dies, blowing up your contradictions. You're the hero and eternal victim. So it all comes down to you. The earth, the stars, the sun and good ears, one on either side your head. I notice you don't care to use them. I said I notice that you never use them. Someone's got a story they begin to tell. You got to take a stand if it's going over well. You cut them off and it's forgotten. Buddy, you can always top them. Your pride in knowing everything. Don't it come with a little sting? Loneliness. Eventually, every room you clear, with all that noise to prove that you are here, a silent spell, it's your biggest fear. If it ever comes, you might disappear. Don't you know you have it backwards? But in the distance, you're just talking faster.
Music there from morning. music there from Dean Johnson. That was your choice. I liked it. I don't mean it. I didn't mean that.
No, in a negative way. No, I love Dean Johnson. He's a Seattle musician, and I actually was able to interview him in Nashville, and just about the loveliest human ever. So you'll be hearing that interview in the next weeks to come here. But he has a new album out. It's his second. He got his start in music at 51.
Wow.
Yeah. So pretty great life story. And yeah, you can hear more great music coming up at 9 o'clock today with DJ Dang. We were laughing when we got on. Sorry, Hattie, I got to tell him.
Okay.
We were logging on to Zoom to talk to Chelsea. And
we're a little sleepy today. Let's put that, both of us.
When I logged in, Heidi waved at me through Zoom, even though we're sitting right across the desk
from
each other.
It's you.
So that happened right as we were going on the air. So we were giggling a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's all right.
Gotta
have a little bit of fun, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to look at the temperatures right now on this steamy week in October. Right now it is 57 degrees in Hibbing, 63 in Aiken and Bemidji, 60 in Park Rapids, 61 in Grand Rapids, and 64 degrees in sunny Brainerd, Minnesota, where Chelsea joins us from this morning. Morning, Chelsea.
Good morning, Chelsea.
Good morning. Yes. I thought you were saying good morning to me, like in the middle of that.
I was, right? Actually.
Oh my goodness.
The wheels are coming off.
I learned a fact yesterday that I just have to share right off the bat. I played trivia last night with my friends. And actually, I'm gonna pose this trivia question to you guys. So which of these two things means that it is more sunny out? Partly cloudy, partly sunny, or there is no difference?
I tend to think there's no difference, but I guess I would put my money on partly cloudy.
I'd say partly sunny.
Okay, so the answer is that they only say partly cloudy when it's nighttime or when the sun isn't out, and they only say partly sunny when it's daytime. So they actually are kind of meant to mean the same thing. It's just whether, I guess there's no partly moony, so they say partly cloudy.
I wish there was.
Yeah.
I think maybe we should add that into our weather. Partly moony outside tonight. Yeah,
right.
I mean, that
makes sense, but
I've always wondered that because, you know, each morning we're looking at all of the areas that we cover and you're trying to put together kind of a weather forecast, and it'll be like partly cloudy in Bemidji, but partly sunny. It'll be in Grand Rapids. And I'm like, how do I put, you know, those things together? But it might've been depending on when the National Weather Service was updating. So maybe the partly cloudy came in the evening of what they thought the next day would be or something. And then, I don't know.
You know, we debated it for quite a while because we're like, those icons, the icons always have the sun on them if it's partly sunny, you yeah. know. And but yeah, I guess there is no difference, quote unquote. But my friend John, who's the trivia host, added, but there is a difference. Okay. One of them is at night. One of them is in the day. So,
okay. Ken.
Wow.
All right. The more you know. Thanks, Chelsea.
I was going to.
All right. See you guys later.
Yeah. That's it for the news update today.
Bye. has it ever happened yet in your career here that we've been like, slow news week? Not much going on.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the biggest of news weeks, but there is always something you guys are covering. Let's dig into it. What should we know about first?
Well, there's a story that I worked on last week that, you know, I'm always kind of a court junkie. I enjoy looking through court cases, and we've been following a lot of these court cases that have come out of the Enbridge Line 3 protests that happened in 2021. And we had another decision come down recently related to a protest in Hubbard County. Now, in this case, this is a civil suit that was brought by a protester against the Hubbard County Sheriff Corey Aukus and Chief Deputy Scott Parks, and also just Hubbard County overall, over his treatment during this arrest. Now, he had attached himself to a piece of equipment, to an excavator at a construction site for a Line 3 construction site, and he used this device called a sleeping dragon. Now, it's basically this, it's made out of PVC and other materials, and you attach yourself in it with like clips, and it becomes pretty much impossible to extract someone from this device without using like a power tool to cut it open unless they voluntarily release themselves from it. So the idea, of course, being, you know, that they were stopping the construction, they were preventing construction from happening of the Line 3. So this protester was refusing to, you know, dislodge himself from this device and remove himself from the piece of equipment. And over the course of this interaction, the Hubbard County Sheriff and the Chief Deputy, according to this lawsuit, they used pain compliance techniques to try to get him to comply with them. So they applied pressure to pressure points on his head and his face. And ultimately, they ended up having to call in an extraction team to remove him because he wouldn't remove himself despite the use of these techniques. He ended up having permanent facial paralysis, tinnitus, and he is suing and saying that it was excessive force. So that's a federal level case because he's alleging constitutional rights violations. So the district court actually throughout the case, they said, nope, these officers enjoy immunity because they were performing this in the course of their duties, and that they basically that it was justified, and that they can't face you know, a lawsuit over this. So the appeals court for the 8th district, the U.S. Court of Appeals, ruled no, they do not have immunity in this case, in their opinion, because they used force that was more than needed for this situation. They're saying they knew that the power tools were coming. They knew that, you know, they would be able to extract him in other ways, and that what he was doing was not serious enough to warrant the application of pain in the way that they did. So it's always really interesting if you're, you know, reading through a case like this, just to see how both sides present things. Of course, the attorneys that were representing Hubbard County law enforcement, you know, were saying, well, no, they used the absolute minimum force necessary, and that he was committing a felony. So he actually was charged with a felony during the actual crime portion of this case, because they charged him with theft, because he was temporarily in control of this excavator, and they said it's worth more than $5,000, so therefore it's felony level. Interestingly, in a little footnote on the Court of Appeals case, they're like, no, no, no. Like, he had temporary control of this excavator, but he didn't damage it. And the amount of time that he was in control of it was not worth the more than $5,000. So they kind of questioned whether he should have been charged with that felony in the first place. Just to be, so we are clear on this, this protester did plead guilty to a lesser charge as a result of the case itself. So this is a secondary civil lawsuit that has come out of that. You know, we've seen a lot of cases that have been overturned, have been examined further in the courts since then. And it is interesting because, you know, we heard a lot of people bringing up things like this that had happened during the protests that they felt were unjust. And now, you know, we just had a case overturned in Aiken County that the woman was charged with a felony and they said no way. And there was prosecutorial misconduct found in that case. So needless to say, it's certainly an interesting area to be following if you're into courts.
And it's ongoing now?
Yeah. So what the result of this is that this case now will go back to the district court for further review. They basically said, you can't throw out this lawsuit. You have to consider the facts. And so that's what they're doing. So there was no decision. They didn't decide, yes, this guy won his lawsuit. But they're saying there was enough there to not allow it to just be thrown out. So.
Interesting. Thanks for that, Chelsea.
So Larissa's covered some news coming out of Ball Club. Good news for that community.
Yeah, on Friday, Larissa Donovan went out to Ball Club in order to be there for a groundbreaking ceremony. So there's a community center, a wellness center that is being built in Ball Club. It is the third of three groundbreakings that have happened across Leech Lake Nation this year. And it is part of a $24 million investment that the legislature put forth in 2023 in order to support the building of these wellness centers on Leech Lake. So there's a bunch of dignitaries there. We had State Senator Mary Kunish was there, and the leaders of Leech Lake Tribal Council, and they were there to just talk about, you know, the importance of these community centers in Indigenous life, especially in rural communities. And this new community center is going to serve people from like life to death. I mean, you can get prenatal care there. And also it's a place where they have like funerary wakes. So it's an important cultural touchstone in an area too that, you know, could use some more gathering spaces and some more places for people in the community to come together. And also what happened there was a Leech Lake band entered into an agreement with Itasca County for the first time to kind of work together better for the people. You know, they have overlapping boundaries. So Ball Club is in Itasca County, even though it's part of the Leech Lake Reservation. Interestingly, Ball Club also is one of the recently added stops of the Go Marty autonomous vehicle program, and their current community center is like where that pickup spot is. So I can only imagine that this new place will also be a hub for that. But what was a interesting little piece about it was that John Johnson, commissioner for Itasca County, presented an unfinished pipe to Farron Jackson, who is the chairman of Leech Lake. And that was to symbolize like the relationship with Itasca County and Leech Lake Nation. And presenting a pipe is like a really meaningful thing in Indigenous culture. And so Larissa got some great video of that, and we have that up at our Facebook and Instagram pages if you want to check that out.
So Chelsea, you were talking about did you say it's a part of a grant for infusing some economic development into Leech Lake. Is that Bina homeless shelter part of that same?
That is a separate stream of funding that was given for the Bina homeless shelter. But yeah, we're seeing, you know, new infrastructure going up in that area. And it's great to see, you know, with the Bina homeless shelter, that's like, it's going to be a real asset for that community, with especially with it providing family spaces. A lot of homeless shelters, you know, are either only for like single adults or only for families. And it just, if you only have one or the other in your community, you know, someone's going to be missing.